Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, Sangai Nation, welcome to the show here on another Friday. QT and Sangai with you. Really quickly, before we get into the interview today with our guest, some show notes. If you're looking for some professional wrestling, tonight you have WCWO in Indianapolis, Indiana, RCW in Calgary, Alberta, All Star Wrestling in Surrey, BC, VIPW in Victoria, BC, VWE in Imperial, California, PWA in Cheshire, Connecticut, DSCW in Blue Ridge, Georgia, NSCW in Hardin, Kentucky, and PWAS in Melvindale, Michigan. Tomorrow night, MSWA in Maryville, Tennessee, Legacy Wrestling in Mannheim, Pennsylvania, SPW in Oakman, Alabama, WPW in Vancouver, British Columbia, EWF in Baldwin Park, California, UEW in Los Angeles, California, Project 42 in Seattle, Washington, All-Star Pro Wrestling in Shelbyville, Indiana, CCW in Evansville, Indiana, WRW in Fishers, Indiana, BCW in Thelma, Kentucky, WWA in Owensboro, Kentucky, AWF in Herrim, Minnesota, BTW in Claiborne, Texas, the NWA running in Marion, Ohio, and Gouge Pro Wrestling in Fuquay, North Carolina tomorrow. So get out there, support your local independents. Lots of shows happening all over the map. But without further ado, I would like to welcome our guest on to the show today. He is the California stud, Rugged Rod Price. Mr. Price, welcome to our show.
Thanks for having me, Jason. It's a pleasure, man. Support that wrestling. Bring back the territories. That's what that wrestling needs.
Absolutely. Yeah. Definitely miss the territories.
No, yeah.
Well, our first question for you, since we ask everybody this their first time on our show, what got you into the business of professional wrestling?
Probably like 99% of all the people that got into wrestling, they were a fan at one time. And I was kind of tried to play pro ball. And ended up blowing out my knee, but still wanted to, I guess, not get a real job, as I say. And ended up running into Red Bass Team doing a commercial shoot in Los Angeles. And he gave me his card and called him up, and the rest is history, I guess.
You made the transition from professional football to pro wrestling like a lot of people in that time frame did. Professional wrestling had a lot of athletes in it that transitioned after their football days were done. Were you aware of the amount of wrestlers that had made the transition at the time? Did you seek out any of those guys for advice on how to make that jump?
No, unfortunately, I didn't counsel anybody. I should have, but I knew all about the football players from Dick the Bruiser to Ernie Ladd, I knew these guys had transitioned, and there was a lot more. And it was just a natural fit because back in the day of football, they didn't make the kind of money they make. And, you know, you had to get a summer job. Some guys worked construction. Some guys worked wrestling.
A lot of your career was spent in the southern part of the country, especially around the state of Texas. It has a very long and storied history in the wrestling business. What gravitated you towards that particular part of the country?
At the time when I first started doing shows, I was staying local in California and traveling with the remnants of the AWA that was working out of the steamboat or showboat in Las Vegas at the time. And Vince, of course, had bought up all the cable, and independents were starting to dry up. And this company was going nowhere that I was working for. So I packed up my bags and headed toward Texas to try to get into world class. And thank God, Red, without asking, Red made a phone call for me to a couple of my dear friends, James Beard and Larry Dwyer. And they kind of took me under their wing and helped me get in to see the people I needed to see. And one of them was Fritz Von Erich, and I was able to work a little the tail end of World Class before it folded and transferred to USWA.
You brought up James Beard, and he remains to this day one of the top referees in the business. He's the senior referee for the NWA these days. I know he's extremely good. Who are some of your favorite referees to work with in the ring? Because that's sort of a art that doesn't get full recognition and full respect, I think, in today's landscape of things.
Well, I can go back. I, of course, enjoyed working with James because he was such a pro. But besides him, you know, I can go back to Bronco Lubitsch. Bronco, yeah, at that time, was if you were a heel trying to get heat, it was hard because he wasn't letting you get anything over. And if you did false finishes, he wasn't coming down to tap. He was using his foot. So it was fun with him. John Keaton, I enjoyed him. He worked for Global. There was so many guys. Tony Falk, he was good. Just helped me out, made it easy. Helped me with a spot or two if I was in trouble. I mean, all these guys, somewhere down the line, it helped me. And the referee can make or break a match, I'm telling you. And it's the third man in the ring, and it's a team. And I'm telling you, a good ref goes a long way.
Absolutely. In your career, you worked not only singles, but you did a lot of tag teams with some pretty notable partners, as a matter of fact. Did you have a preference as far as wrestling as a singles or wrestling in a tag?
I enjoyed my singles when I was put out. They pushed me. I really enjoyed the tags because it cuts down on the wear and tear. But, you know, they pushed me, oh, you got to do singles. But I started out, one of my first partners was Steve Austin, and we were both cutting our teeth trying to get somewhere. And later they put me with John Tatum. I tagged with Demolition Incorporated. Could have been a host of people, Bundy, Gang, Kamala, whoever was there. But I enjoyed tag teams because you didn't take the wear and tear as much.
But singles was good too, just to self-promote, and you know, all I guess all the glory goes to you. But I think if I had to do it over again, if I could, I would just like to probably do more tag stuff than anything, just for the longevity.
You mentioned the tag team with John Tatum, and you were featured pretty heavily on the Global Wrestling Federation when it was on ESPN, one of their top teams. What was it like wrestling for Global, which had national television 5 days a week, but wasn't necessarily a huge money promotion at the time?
Well, I'm working for Global. I worked for Joe Pedicino when he came in, when he first started the Global. And it was going to be good exposure because it had national TV, ESPN. I wish they would have pumped it more, or maybe got more support, because it could have been something really big. But I guess the powers that be just wanted to keep it local, and they were looking at TV revenue, and everybody else was trying to, you know, push and pull on him. I know the boys were hollering for him to expand more, but I really just think they were mindset on trying to make the TV market make their money that way.
One of my fondest memories of Global was the pizza business breakup when John Tatum and Jack Victory had gone into business to open a pizza restaurant, and that blew up in their faces, and yourself and I believe Rip Morgan became involved as you were partnered with each of the guys separately. Do you remember that particular angle, and do you have any thoughts on it?
Yeah, I can still hear John shooting the interview on it about the 30-minute or less delivery. That's what he got ripped off on. But it was John was so creative. He had a mind for the business, man. He knew what to do and timing, and he taught me a lot about professional wrestling. I can't say that John ever led me wrong, man. He always told me straight up, taught me so much about the business. And Jack helped me out. Jack and I worked together in tag teams again in ECW later on. But the pizza angle, they wouldn't let us be as creative as we wanted to, and they kind of ran afoul because they wouldn't. And we kept on trying to push the envelope, and they finally pulled the rug out from under us.
Now, in your career, I know you've wrestled in a lot of different rings since you've been in quite a few different companies. Did you have a particular favorite ring that you most like to wrestle in, just for whatever particular reason?
I always liked the wrestling rings with the big spring in the middle. And I didn't want it too bouncy, because I'd pop the boards out and knock you out. But just, you know, when you take those big bumps, you kind of absorb some of that. The ring at the Sportatorium was probably one of the worst rings I've ever worked in, as far as being stiff. Outside of that one and Killer Tim Brooks, those two rings were the hardest rings I think I've ever worked in. And Sportatorium ring was tough, especially when you were working there, you know, twice a week. It adds up and takes a toll on your body. I mean, we'd work we'd film twice a week sometimes, and there'd be times that we'd work maybe three or four times to get the tapings out. And it was brutal, man. People think, well, oh yeah, you only worked around Dallas. It was like, no, Dallas was just another stop on the circuit for me. You know, I was going to Japan at the time and would come back and maybe have 2 days off and then have to go back to wrestle, or sometimes come back and have to go right to and wrestle. So, yeah, that Sportatorium ring, it sticks in my mind. It's probably one of the down factors in my body right now.
And you talk about how bad the Sportatorium ring was, and I've heard a lot of wrestlers say over the years that it was very difficult to work in that ring. Did you ever specifically have injuries because of that ring that if they had a better ring at the Sportatorium, you wouldn't have had?
I don't know how many times the ropes have broke during matches. I'm telling you, they would just keep putting Band-Aids on it. And there for a time, I was scared to even hit the ropes, man. I was like, I'm going to hit these ropes and end up in the third row and break my neck. But I did hit the ropes one time, and it broke, and it was just starting. It was a dark match, and they were getting set up, and I hit those ropes, and they broke right by Doyle King's table right there. I went smashing down on the equipment. Fortunately, I didn't break anything, but it hurt me, man. I still had to go out and wrestle later on, and it was tough. I was supposed to go out three more times, and I only made it twice.
Well, at this point in time, my co-host QT is standing by, and I know that QT also has some questions, so I'm going to pass things over to him for a bit.
Hi.
Well, thank you, Sangay. Hello, Mr. Price.
Hello.
Mr. Price, I saw your YouTube video called Rod Price versus Terry Sims, and in this video, and I'm thinking you wrestled Terry many times, maybe you will remember this one, because both of you wore white boots that were calf high, and both of you had kneecap protectors on. This was a rare match when both wrestlers had on the same white boots and both knee pads on. In fact, we had one of our regular listeners of Turnbuckle Turmoil do some research, and this has only happened to four other wrestlers that we have interviewed in our 1,100 interview career. My question is, did you ever auction off any of your wrestling boots that were maybe autographed for a child with cancer?
No, unfortunately, no. I did not. It would be a great cause. And I would give my boots up now, but they're headed to Texas for the Hall of Fame in Wichita Falls.
Oh, wow. All right. Hall of Fame in Wichita Falls. Very nice. Okay. I saw, I believe it was Gene Simmons, the bass player for Kiss. He once donated his demon costume at a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame pub. I saw one of his suits. Would you equate that your boots have the same price as Gene Simmons' suit, demon suit? That's what I'm getting at. Yes.
Wow. Yeah, me and Gene Simmons. There you go. No, I think Gene might have me a little bit on this one. You know, he was they were rocking pretty good a lot earlier than I was, so I have no qualms giving this up to Gene.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, speaking of Gene Simmons and Kiss, what was it? Did you have any entrance music early in your career when you wrestled in Texas back in 1990 with GWF. Any entrance music?
Oh. Any time off that I could, I was out on a lake somewhere. It was my getaway, and I didn't care if I caught fish or didn't catch fish. And it was just my little peace time where I could gather my thoughts and recharge my batteries for to continue to go on. I love to fish.
Okay, now I know that you live near, do you currently live near New Orleans?
Correct.
Oh, okay, how's the fishing down there?
Down here, man, it's sportsman's paradise, baby. It's awesome. It really is. It's if you love to fish and you love to hunt, and I wish I could go hunting, but my body's just, I cannot. It's hard for me to get on a boat and take that pounding on the water to get out and fish, but to hunt, to walk, and to do that, and I've done some quail hunts, and I enjoy it. I really do. And you know, if you love to hunt and fish, don't hesitate. Come on down. Louisiana is a great place to do both.
Well, I'm sorry that you lost your house to Hurricane Katrina. I myself was stationed on Lake Pontchartrain on the Coast Guard base when Katrina hit. And that was a very tragic event there in New Orleans. Do you live right now in Baton Rouge?
I live outside of Baton Rouge. I live in Hammond.
Oh, okay. Oh, Hammond. Okay, yes.
I'm about 46 miles out from New Orleans and 25 miles from One Man Gang in Baton Rouge.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right. Well, Mr. Price, this offseason in the NFL saw 12 NFL players that were under contract call an end to their NFL careers, and all of them were under the age of 30. A few of them were nearing 30, and five of them were of the age of 28, and two of them were 26 years old. They called their they had a team meeting and canceled their contracts. All of them mentioned that they wanted to retire before they received more blows to the head and damage to their knees and backs. This sports show host that I was listening to prompted him to say, due to the increased awareness of the effects of concussions on the brain and later in life dementia, he predicted that in 10 to 13 years, it'll be very rare to see anyone over the age of 34 in the NFL. Do you see the same trend of early retirements in wrestling, say 10 to 13 years from now, when it might be rare to see anyone at or over the age of 45 wrestling?
Oh, man, wrestling is such a different breed. I mean, football, you know, the guys can get in. Nowadays, thank God, the guys can get in, make the money, and get out. If you go back, you know, football has always been underpaid. And guys had to stick it out, you know. They knew they were taking a toll on their bodies. And it's like you get in your 20s and you already have, you know, three or four knee operations, both shoulders scoped, or, you know, you've been injured. And it's like, what am I going to do when I get, if they cut me tomorrow, what am I going to do for the rest of my life? You know, if you hold your health, you know, you're able to go out and do stuff. But if you're broken down already, it's a lot harder for these guys to get out and do something. And, you know, they're a lot smarter and educated now about the concussions. You know, they used to blow them off back when I was playing ball. It was like, you know, getting your bell rung, just get out there, get the cobwebs out, let's go, and send you out. And I caught a lot of it's machoism, toughness, get out and go. And the other half is not being educated. You know, they didn't know what they know now.
Yes.
And they're finding out, and it's good. It's good for the athletes, and anything that's good for them is I like.
And part of the fact that they're getting out is the soaring medical costs and medical insurance. That's another factor. Okay. All right.
It's ridiculous.
Did you ever have a chance to meet Dick Butkus?
No, I didn't. I've been around a lot of different events and a lot of different things. I know he was on. We were working in Chicago area, and he was supposed to be in the building, but he never came backstage, so I never did meet him. And that was when I was working for ECW.
Oh, all right. Okay. Well, can you tell us what your position was in the San Diego Charger organization? Did you play a defensive lineman?
I came in as a nose tackle and ended up as a long snapper and a guard.
Oh, wow. Okay. What was your playing weight as a nose tackle?
I'm sorry. Can you repeat that?
What was your playing weight as a nose tackle?
I was right around 3 points.
Oh, wow. That does put a lot of weight on the knee joints, yes.
You bet. And, you know, a lot of guys were that's when they were first starting to break the 300 mark.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, who had the better cheerleaders, the Oakland Raiders or the San Diego Chargers?
Wow. Carl, that's a toss up. Both were really, really good lookers. So I'm just gonna say you had to make your choice. If I had to make a choice, I would probably lean towards San Diego.
Oh, okay. All right. Probably because they had a little bit more sun than down there. Still do.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, did you ever have the pleasure of having a Long Island iced tea or Singapore sling with Kenny the Snake Stabler at the Los Angeles International Airport?
I never ran into Kenny at the airport. I can guarantee you, I ran into a lot of, not Kenny, but I'll tell you, if I did, I would have probably sat down and at least had one with him just for old times. I met him on the practice field a few times, and a really great guy. What a career he had.
Wow, okay, all right. Will, are you aware that King Kong Bundy weighed 350 pounds when he played high school football?
That does not surprise me.
Yes. Do you have any interesting road stories or trips that you took with King Kong Bundy?
My favorite one is when we would, after the show, we'd stop and get food. And Akbar would be driving, and he'd pull through like a Wendy's or something. And depending if it was a gang or depending on who else was in the car. But Bundy would order like 4 triple deckers, a couple of mountain of fries, chocolate shake, apple pie. Ordering like for the whole car, just his order. And
wow,
Bundy would always go, "Hey, act, make sure they don't know that's all for me." And act's like, all right. So he'd go there and he goes, I got 4 orders for you. So they take the order and he'd do Bundy's last,
And he'd say, "You got all that?" The kid would always say, "Man, that's a lot of food." "Yeah, that's for King Kong Bundy, his fat ass back here."
That's starting to measure up to Andre the Giant.
Oh, he's a big man.
Yes.
I can't imagine. I've heard legendary stories of what Andre drank, but not what he ate.
Yes, I think he had like 105 beers in one setting.
Amazing.
And you know, if those are 8-ounce beers, that's over 50 pounds of liquid.
It's incredible. Incredible.
Well, Mr. Price, is it true that one of your favorite plays of all time on the NFL highlight reel was when Oakland Raiders safety Jack Tatum met Earl Campbell on the 1-yard line?
Of course.
Uh-huh.
Anybody loves football, anybody likes that type of hitting, you can't go wrong. I mean, that was the epitome of football.
Yes, my wrestling sources in Shelton, Washington were correct that this was one of your favorite plays of all time.
Absolutely.
Yes. I mean, Jack Tatum hit him full force in midair, and Earl Campbell, all his forward momentum stopped, and then he stumbled sideways for about 3 or 4 steps. Absolutely sideways. It was like he got hit and he took off at a right angle, and then somehow he found the end zone by stumbling forward. Yes.
Tatum put the butt of his helmet on Earl Campbell's chin. It was like a Mike Tyson knockout punch.
Ooh.
And Campbell just stumbled on in, man. Unbelievable.
Now, it was rumored or pretty much documented that Earl Campbell's thighs were 34 inches around. How big were your thighs? Because you were a pretty good powerlifting man and during your wrestling career. How big were your thighs?
My thighs in the beginning of my career were right around 30 inches.
Oh, boy. Oh, okay. How much could you deadlift?
I was deadlifting. I went to the Senior Nationals in Vegas, and I deadlifted 835.
Holy, 835. Woo.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, my gosh. Okay. Well, that's like 835. Isn't that 10 45-ounce plates on each side? No, about 8.
Yeah, but they would use 100-pound plates.
Oh, 100-pound, okay. Well, Mr. Price, there is a growing demand, especially in Hollywood and Malibu, to include in one's diet animals that have only known to have eaten a vegetarian diet all their lives. And indeed, the vegetarian diet these animals eat must be free of growth hormones, chemical additives, and HGH. And in Japan, cows that are of the Kobe beef variety are given daily massages. They sleep on foam rubber mats that are heated in the wintertime, anytime the temperature falls below 52 degrees. And between the ages of 6 months to 2 years, they are given up to 6 gallons of milk to drink a day. My question is a twofold question. Have you ever had lamb in your diet that was raised strictly on a vegetarian diet with no growth hormones or MSG? And two, due to the pampered life of a typical Kobe beef cow, how long would that cow tap out if you had gotten that cow in a camel clutch, say, 20 years ago?
Oh, man, let's start with the lamb. Yes, I've had lamb in my diet, and it was always fresh off a farm. And that's usually I never bought store-bought lamb. Always got it through a farmer. You know, I'd find a farmer if I was in the mood for lamb and hit him up or find out where he sells his beef or lamb chops or wherever he was, whatever I was in the mood for. And, yeah, that Kobe beef, boy, those, talk about pampered. They're kind of like they're kind of like the WWE when they were signing those contracts for the guys that were just big and sending them to Florida. That, you know, they never paid a due in their life, but they were making big money. Yeah, I would have tapped them out quickly.
Oh, okay. A cow in a camel clutch. There would be a lot of Pacific Northwest wrestlers that would pay to see that. Yes. Okay.
Yeah, well, that big neck wouldn't help them.
Well, Mr. Price, on November 10th, 1990, while tag teaming with Steve Austin for Texas Wrestling Federation, you defeated the Angel of Death and Abdullah the Butcher. My question is, did Abdullah the Butcher try to use a fork on you at any time in the match?
Yeah, I think when the bell rang.
Oh!
Yeah, I... At the time when, Abby was coming down to Texas a lot, and of course, I worked with Abby a lot during that period, and yeah, I saw the fork a lot. and I'm not joking. I think that match, because I started that match, and I think that was Abby's first move.
Oh, okay. Wow, all right. Have you ever been to Abdullah the Butcher's House of Ribs and Chinese Food in Atlanta, Georgia?
No. I've been in the area and just never had the time to stop. I have a son that lives in Atlanta, and he stopped by there many times and talked to Abby, and he'd always send his regards. I saw some post on Facebook not too long ago where I think Abby closed down. I'm not sure. You know, I can't buy into everything you see on Facebook. It looked like it was closed.
Oh, okay. Well, isn't it true that you also tag team with your son and were known as the Old School Outlaws? And was this your son Logan? Was this your son Logan?
Yes, this is my son Logan. And we did. We wrestled probably a handful of times together as Old School Outlaws. Him living in Atlanta, it was hard to get him because of all the shows were this way. I was like, well, why can't you get me that way? He said, well, I can't afford to pay you. I was like, okay, good point. But, it was, I always enjoy, I have two sons, one's Andy and the other one's Logan, and I always enjoy doing anything with them, doesn't matter what.
Oh, okay. Now, is Logan a better fisherman than you are?
No. Logan would hook his ear.
Oh, okay.
He just, he moved out and did his own thing, and I don't, it doesn't bother me. I'd still take him fishing today if he wanted to go.
Wow, okay. All right. Well, you mentioned tagging with John Tatum in the GWF, and in fact, you and John won the tag team titles by defeating Steve Simpson in a handicap match on November 22nd, 1991. My question is, was John Tatum related to Jack Tatum of the Oakland Raiders?
No, I don't think there was any relationship. Jack had more of a killer instinct. John was more of a, I call him an intellectual, he was a wisecracking, smart guy.
without using the A word again, but John was far from being a Jack Tatum.
Oh, okay. All right. All right. Now, you mentioned that you could deadlift 840 pounds, 850 pounds when you were playing football. How much was your squat at the time?
My squat was right up 8. I know I did 875. And I know in the gym I had 920 on my back at one time. But
wow.
I don't remember if I cut it high or was able to sink it. I don't remember. I just remember the feeling of having 920 pounds on my back.
Yeah, that's incredible. A lot of fruit pies.
Wow.
Okay, what's the hardest knife edge chop you have ever received from a woman, and was it from the fabulous Moolah?
Knife chop from a woman. Fortunately, I didn't have to take too many from women.
Okay.
I might have to say Jazz.
Oh, Jazz. Who is Jazz?
Jazz from started with ECW, that went to WWE and was a women's champion.
Oh, okay. She probably could knife edge chuck harder than Stacy Keibler then.
Yeah. She was a fistful of fire, man, I'm telling you.
Ooh, okay. All right. Well, were you a big fan of the women of GLOW wrestling?
Yeah, I had a lot of respect for them. Anybody that got in the ring, no matter be it woman or man, but had the guts to get in there and flop around and throw your body around, absolutely. I know GLOW was kind of a TNA kind of thing, but absolutely. I had a lot of respect for those women.
Oh, okay. All right. Can you name your top three GLOW women wrestler of all time? Your top three favorites?
Yeah. To be Moolah. And then...
Okay.
Boy, I kind of lost her name for a moment. Concussion, chair shot there. I have to come back to that one, but my third would be Jazz.
Okay.
Yeah. Talking about people in my era.
How about the farmer's daughter?
I'm sorry?
How about the farmer's daughter?
Farmer's daughter, there you go.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Mr. Price, have you ever been to the Cauliflower Alley Club?
Yes, I have. I went out there. I think I went out there back in the 80s, 89, and enjoyed it, and would like to go. Would like to return. Hopefully, I can travel a little more this year. We'll see. Just see how my body feels. But, yeah, I'd like to get back there.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Mr. Price, as you know, we got a presidential election coming up in November. And speaking of a wrestler that got into politics, Governor of Minnesota, Jesse Ventura, have you ever had the pleasure of meeting Jesse Ventura, former Navy SEAL?
Yes. I met Jesse several times. Once was at a show we did in Minnesota. He showed up and just came by to say hi to all the boys. Met him down in New Orleans. I was out of wrestling and was working real job, and everybody's like, man, I think that's Jesse Ventura. And a buddy of mine went over there, and I was like, hey, Jesse, and turned around. That's when he was doing all that investigation program, conspiracy theory, I think. And
yes.
And my buddy asked him, well, why'd you quit? And he looked at Jesse, looked at him and said, because if not, they were going to kill me.
Oh, wow.
It's too much. Too much.
Oh, all right. Well, now, do you have to update your master's plumber certificate every year? You're a master plumber.
Yes. You're yes, but I'm out of that. I'm out of that business. I'm just pretty much a homebody right now for the last few years, just trying to heal up.
Oh, okay. Did you ever hit anyone with plastic tubing from your plumbing job as a foreign object?
Many times.
Oh, okay.
Trying to get somebody's attention.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, it was a very nice talking with you, and I'm going to turn it back over to Sign Guy now.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, QT. Well, Mr. Price, I know you were in world class in the GWF and ECW, so you were around a lot of the nationally televised companies. Did you find having to work differently when you were wrestling on television as opposed to shows where it was just in front of the local fans?
Yeah, because TV, you only have so much time to work with, whereas a house show, you know, you're killing time. So on a house show, you may have 20 minutes to do a show, whereas TV, they may give you 12. Say, you got 12 minutes, take it home.
Did you personally have a preference over wrestling TVs versus wrestling just the house shows?
Well, I always enjoyed the TV just for the exposure because you knew that's what was going to make your money the next week. And when you had to do a house show, you were hoping for a good house, you get a good payday, and go out and entertain them to bring them back.
As someone that was around for the world class era, we know today that a lot of the wrestlers there had their issues with substance abuse, and it was a big problem for a lot of the people that competed there. Were you aware, and did you see a lot of what the wrestlers were going through as far as that was concerned, or was that something that they were able to shield from the rest of the locker room?
No, I think be it football or wrestling, you know, if you're around people as much as you're going to be, you know what's going on. At least I did.
You also had the stint in ECW, and they were known for being a very rowdy type of locker room. Did you see any comparisons between the ECW locker room and some of the other locker rooms you were in as far as what went on backstage and the attitude in general from the boys?
I think ECW, and I thank God for them. Thank God for Paul Heyman. Their dressing room was like being a rock star. There was women back there. There was all kinds of paraphernalia, but the boys were great. You know, everybody was. There was no egos. It's not like going to WWE or WCW. You don't have all the big egos to deal with, and nobody's
stabbing in the back. Everybody, actually a brother looking out for each other. And I thought ECW was one of the greatest experiences. In fact, I'm glad I kind of went out on that note with ECW. I thought it was a great way to go. I really enjoyed my time with them.
Oh, had you watched ECW very much before you actually went to the company? Did you sort of know what to expect when you got there?
Yeah. I'd watch, and they had a show and came on, I think, Thursday night, Wednesday night, something. And I knew it was crazy stuff. I talked to Paul. Paul wanted me to come to, I think it might have been East Coast Wrestling at the time. In 95, he called me up and wanted me to move to the East Coast. And I was just getting ready to go do a tour of Germany for Otto Bonds. And I said, well, let me get in touch with you when I get back. And when I got back, I worked for Vince for a little bit and then ended up going to ECW.
Well, we're coming down to the last few minutes of the show. I want to give that time to you. If there's anything you'd like to say to the listeners, if you want to plug anything at all, go right ahead and do so.
I just got two things, man. Jeannie Clark, used to be Steve Austin's wife. She was a manager of us when we first started. And, of course, they went on to do their thing, got married. But she's got a book out called Through the Shattered Glass. And if you want to, it's not a dirt book. It's just a good biography on her and Steve Austin. I mean, you pick this book up and it consumes you. It's really good. And my other thing is, man, I've gone through a lot of things in my life, and I always needed an anchor to hold on to, and my anchor is Jesus Christ, my Lord and Savior. And I just thank you guys for having me. I would love to do the show again, man.
Cool. We'll have to have you back on. Yes.
Absolutely.
Love to do it, man.
Well, Mr. Price, thank you very, very much for being on today. We absolutely loved having you on our show. We will definitely do this again. And fans, if you're not familiar, jump on the YouTube, check out some Rod Price matches. Very, very good talent. I think you'll definitely enjoy his work. Get out there, support your local independents in the next few days. A lot of professional wrestling happening this week. So get out there and support what they're doing. I'll personally be in Seattle at Project 42 on Saturday, so get out there, support that. Also running a very special edition of the show tomorrow for the NWA Continental Heavyweight Champion Bad Blood. That is at noon Pacific time, so join us for that, and we will talk to you tomorrow.